Okay, the Environment, Economic Development, and Agriculture Division for Wednesday, January 21st, 2015, will come to order. Members, today we're just going to have an overview of the Clean Water Recommendations Report. But before we get started, we have some new people that I want them to introduce themselves, and so you can see who's around here. Gabe, why don't you step up to the table here so they can see you on TV and talk into the microphone and tell them who you are.
Okay. Hi there, everyone. My name is Gabe. I'm the committee page here. Just graduated from the U of M, so I'm really happy to be here and serve the process. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Peter, I think you're new too. Why don't you come over and introduce yourself so everybody knows who you are?
We have a set of GOP research.
Okay. And have you guys introduced yourselves before? Just so everybody knows?
Julie Byerly, I work for Senator Buck. Amelia Sterling, I work for Media.
And Gloria Gunville, I work for Senate Majority Research.
Okay. And everybody else around the table, I think you know. Apparently you sit right here. Just a little bit of an announcement. We are planning to try and put together a tour. What's the date? On February 17th of Uniman silica mining operation down in the Mankato area. And we have a lot of the details just yet, but if anybody on the committee wants to go and be part of it, just let Laura know. And we should probably get it organized
really cool
within the next couple of weeks so
that's
that
impressive.
We know how many people are going to be going and whether or not we need to take some kind of a bus. So that's just an announcement for now so everybody knows. So we don't have a quorum yet, but when we get one, I will announce it. But we're going to get going with the presentation anyway. So Patrick Flowers, where are you, Patrick? Come on up to the table, and you can start the presentation, and anybody that needs to add in can as you want to go. So welcome to the committee, and go ahead and just state your name for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Patrick Flowers. I'm one of the statewide business organization representatives on the Clean Water Council. With me today is Mr. Mike McKay. He's one of the environmental organizations representatives on the council. He's been the chair for the last 2 years, and I have the fortunate privilege of picking up after him. Also with us is Barb Peichel, who's our coordinator from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. We'd like to kind of get right to it very quickly. The Clean Water Council, as I'm sure all of you are aware, was established by the Clean Water Legacy Act back in 2006. We have 28 members on the council right now. 19 of those are approved and voting members, and they're made up of groups with interest in clean water across the state. There's also 5 commissioner-appointed non-voting members that come from the state agencies, and there's 4 legislatively appointed non-voting members, 2 from the Senate, from the majority and minority, and 2 from the House.
And I should point out one of them is here.
Yes, sir. Actually, two of them are here, sir.
Both of them are here. Both of them are here. All right. Yeah.
Senator Osmick and Senator Scalzi. I won't get into too much of the detail of the act itself. I think most everyone's aware of it, but our job is to basically look at how and make recommendations to the legislator and the governor concerning the expenditure from the clean water funds, and also to kind of keep a look as to how that's being spent and what kind of progress is being made, and make adjustments and recommendations as we feel are appropriate. The Clean Water Council, go ahead and bump up 2 more. We have public meetings. We take topics from just about anything and everything. And as we've gone through the topics and looked at the issues over the last couple of years, a couple of things really jump out at us that have really guided the decision-making on the budget recommendations this go-round. The first is that the vast majority of our issues are really coming from unregulated activities across the state, and by that I mean environmentally unregulated activities. Those are contributing to the vast majority of issues that we see going on. And so to try to address those issues, we've really focused heavily on trying to get at on-the-ground projects that achieve outcomes in water quality on a statewide basis. The second is that there's a new planning effort that's been underway for a while. We continue to support that planning effort concerning the One Watershed, One Plan approach, where it's really a cross-jurisdictional planning for clean water statewide, looking at large watersheds across the entire state. And so with those two things in mind, the council really started to develop some recommendations and some thoughts about how do we want to guide our process to develop the recommendations that we were going to present to you and to the governor. And there's some things that really just grew out of that. Number one is we wanted to really focus on achieving water quality outcomes. The Clean Water Fund gives us a large sum of new money to address issues, but the truth is the scope of the work and the problem is so large that if we dilute it too much, we'll achieve nothing. And so we chose to really focus more on on-the-ground projects that really had measurable, demonstrable outcomes, and then also making sure we met our mandates that are in the Clean Water Legacy Act itself, and address agency coordination issues as well. When it came to developing the actual funding priorities, those principles that I just kind of articulated to you came out in several things. Number one, we wanted measurable outcomes. We just really have kind of hyper-focused on trying to go after things and provide funding recommendations for activities that really achieve something. And we wanted to make sure that those were statewide issues and that there were local control and local management of those issues going forward. Also, implementation of the state's watershed approach was important, and making sure that the programs we're making recommendations for, to the extent possible, really leverage other funds as much as we can. I mean, if we can get $2 for a dollar, absolutely, let's go for the two. And so those things were the main principles that really guided what we were making recommendations on for funding. Slide, please. The funding breaks out this way. We're recommending that about 61% of the funding for the next biennium, or about $135 million, goes to on-the-ground projects. That only funds about 30% of the demonstrated need across the state. That's a very important thing to remember, is that there is a much larger need than this. We have literally 70% more work that could be done if more money was available, because the good projects are out there, they have been screened, they're ready, but we just don't simply have the funding to do it. We're recommending that 14% of the next biennium's funding goes towards drinking water and groundwater protection. That's over and above the 5% minimum mandated by the Clean Water Legacy Act, and that's to make sure that we protect the groundwater. We're seeing groundwater issues in a number of areas across the state, and we want to make sure that not only do we address some of those, but we also try to prevent further degradation in the groundwater resources. Thirdly, monitoring and assessing surface water. That's pretty much maintained a fairly steady amount of funding over the period of the last 8 to 10 years. We're still recommending 11% go to continuing that work. And then another 11%, or about $23.5 million, to developing those watershed restoration and protection strategies and moving that process forward. To get into just a little bit more detail on what's involved in each one of these, in that non-point source implementation, that large chunk of the pie that's $135 million, this is where you see some of the council's funding principles and priorities really starting to come through, because this is a 10% increase over what we recommended during the last biennium. This really gets at achieving those outcomes and helping to improve those water quality issues that we have that are out in outstate Minnesota. The funds are used to implement pollution reduction strategies such as upgrading wastewater infrastructure, restoring eroding stream banks, and implementing conservation tillage in areas where we've got large amounts of sediment that are reaching the rivers. And by capturing that sediment, you kind of get two bangs for the buck, because the sediment and the phosphorus, that's also a problem, are really associated with each other. So when you reduce one, you get the other one as well.
Excuse me, Peter. Just for the record, a quorum is present. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Thank you. On monitoring the assessment programs, these are funds that are going to monitor surface water quality in the state's watersheds. That's currently on a 10-year schedule. And that's monitoring things like fish and plant communities, mercury levels, including fish tissue mercury levels, pesticides, and then doing assessments to determine if waters are impaired or if waters can come off of the impaired list. For the watershed restoration and protection strategies, those are really going to develop the plans, and then also to start working towards implementation for those watersheds that have actually gotten plans written, they're approved, and they're ready to move forward. In the drinking and groundwater protection programs, those funds are really going to help deal with failing septic systems that we have across the state. We've cleaned up about just a little over 4,900 septic systems. Okay. There's still more to be done.
Senator Saxon.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, Mr. Flowers. I just Given at the DNR roundtable last Friday, what the governor had to say about 50-foot buffers in the enforcement and the amount of money and emphasis that you put on that, do you have any comment on how that reflects on you? Or
I don't know that I have any comment about how it reflects on me. The money.
Well, no, I mean not you personally.
Not too much reflects well on me. No, just kidding. The budget recommendation really isn't addressing the riparian buffer issue. That's an issue of how the laws that we currently have are being implemented across the state and kind of the irregularity that's associated with that. The council did make a policy recommendation in our report concerning riparian buffers that we'd like to see that there's a consistent kind of model statute for everybody across the state, but that it's implemented on a local basis based on the local on-the-ground conditions. That was the recommendation that the council made.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Okay, we completed the monitoring and assessment program. Forgive me, age is catching up with me one of these days. I've got to change glasses.
No, I have to ask you a question about that now. So most people put the glasses on to read. You're taking them off to read. What's going on here?
Well, the further away you get, the blurrier you become, sir. all right. On slide 13, the drinking water and groundwater protection programs, we addressed that one just quickly, but that will help us protect those groundwater resources that we have. Now, none of this is specifically geared to or aimed at the White Bear Lake issue, although that's just simply one symptom of the kind of groundwater issues we can have in this state, despite the fact that we're really water wealthy, quite honestly.
Maybe you should, as long as you brought up White Bear, are there recommendations in here for the White Bear situation?
No, sir, we did not.
Okay.
And the reason that the council did not, Chair, is that one of the things we were very diligent about trying to do in the not only the policy recommendations but also in our funding recommendations that we made is to make sure that we're really addressing statewide issues. And so to the extent that White Bear Lake may make application to obtain some funds to help with their project through one of these programs, that's potentially possible. But we didn't specifically go after any individualized, kind of localized issue that way as something that deserved a special line item within the recommendation that we provided to the legislature and to the governor. On the recommendation side, we already touched base on this, but I'll just quickly come back to it. On the riparian buffer policy, The council's recommending that we really do require those maintained vegetative buffers. This is one of those low-hanging fruit issues in the sense that if we have good established buffers that are maintained and well-established across the state, we're going to very quickly reduce the amount of sediment loading going into our rivers, lakes, and streams. This is one of those no-brainers, literally. And so it was kind of easy for the council to develop this recommendation, including the fact that the statewide farm organizations were part of that committee working to develop this particular one. The issue for them was that they wanted to make sure it was implemented locally, that it wasn't just somebody from, you know, the White House, literally, coming out to tell them what to do, but that the people they knew and that there was a consistent playing field across the state so that this would be an even situation for farmers from one area to the other.
Senator Saxon.
So, Mr. Flowers, when you say implemented locally, does that mean enforced locally too?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that's correct.
Okay. Senator Osmond.
Well, Mr. Chair, I've been through this before. The Minnehaha Creek Watershed District attempted through Rule M and Rule D in the last decade to implement a 50-foot setback from the water line on Lake Minnetonka. It failed both times, mostly because you were basically wiping out on Lake Minnetonka many people's complete utter use of their yards between the shoreline and their property. When you say that one size fits all, I'll agree that there are places in perhaps more rural areas where maybe a one size fits all works. It does not work on Lake Minnetonka. I can tell you that right now. If we're going down this route, we asked for, as I confronted the watershed district many times, I asked for the scientific evidence behind what they would be doing on Lake Minnetonka, and every time I was given not scientific evidence, but a lot of conjecture. So if the governor's office is going down this process, I've been through this before, and I'll let you know that if you're going to impact Lake Minnetonka and put 50-foot buffers on every one of my properties, wiping out their rights, you're going to have an issue. And it's not going to be a quiet issue, at least from metropolitan lakes. One size doesn't necessarily fit all.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the distinct opportunity to represent over a tenth of the state's lakes in my district, and I've been following up with this same issue that Senator Osmick is talking about, and I'm wondering if we should get some clarification about what that 50-foot buffer will include. I talked with the Board of Soil and Water folks yesterday, and I asked them that very thing. I said, what about all the lakeshore owners that I have that have purchased anywhere from $150,000 to $300,000 lots and put a, you know, their dream home on there, and now they've got some riprap on their lake. The depth of the lot might be 100, 200, 300 feet deep. Most of them are building back, depending upon whether they have sewering or not, 70 feet at least from the lake. I think if they have the big pipe sewer, they can come back at least 70, and I'm probably missing some of this, but I was to understand that grass, actually mowed grass, qualifies under the 50-foot buffer. Do you know anything about that?
Mr. Chair and members, if I can just say something, I'd like to make a distinction here.
Sir, just
say
your name.
Clean Water Council.
Say your name for the record first.
Mike McKay.
Okay, Mike.
And I'm on the Clean Water Council. What the Clean Water Council's recommendation was basically, there already is existing rules and statutes that apply to very defined waters, and it's not all waters. And what our recommendation is a consistent enforcement on that, and through that each county, and it doesn't have to be done the same, but we're asking them to bring it up to what are the existing rules and statute. The recommendation that the governor has put out is not quite the same. In fact, my understanding is still in development. And so it isn't the council right now saying what waters are affected by that and what that thing's going to look like. I will tell you that I know that even within the existing rules and statutes, there are exceptions. The general is a 50-foot setback, but you can work with the agencies, and if there's real exceptions, you can get done what they're looking to get done. You can do it with 15 feet, for example, if they can get that worked out. So, but we're not in a position to defend at this point what something isn't even defined, and it's not even what we're saying in our recommendation.
Just a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So maybe Mr. Knopf or somebody that's been through this with the 50-foot setback, and Senator Scoy, I'm sure you know as well as the soil and water folks, there's federal programs for farmers to participate in this that it's actually funded. They'll actually pay up to 70 to 75% of the to restore the 50 feet to its natural state. With an agreement that they will actually go forward for 25 years and not touch it. They can maintain it but not touch it. It's a federal program. But lakeshore owners are very concerned about this. Does this include lakeshore? Is grass included in your memory when this was passed some years ago?
Mr. Knopf, you know
mowed grass, I'm pretending.
Chairman,
to.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I'm not sure exactly what the governor was all including in his remarks for the 50-foot setback. The one that I'm real familiar with is the one specifically for agriculture, where you're not allowed to cultivate within 50 feet of the shore, and that's enforced by locals. And that's the one that we hear about the most. I mean, there are general setbacks. It's all under the shoreland zoning rules of the Department of Natural Resources, and there are setback rules for buildings and other things under the shoreland rules. It basically becomes a model ordinance that the locals implement. But as far as what the governor is talking about, as far as the 50-foot, we don't know the details yet from that. Apparently, there's going to be a group of people that are working out the details, and so until we see those details, it's kind of hard to know what exactly he was talking about.
Thank you.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, and maybe Mr. Knopf, if you would mind elaborating just a little bit on some of the ag land issues, because I think part of it here is when I read the words private ditches, it brings to mind all the field ditches and all of that, and what the interaction between those and the public ditches are.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, that's a really good question. In fact, I think the governor might have been including ditches in his discussion without knowing that there's a very big difference in how in the grass strips that are required for certain ditches and this 50-foot piece that's in it. Because the 50-foot piece that's in here rules of the DNR relate to public waters. Some ditches can be public waters, especially if they've been a straightened out stream, things like that. But there's a whole different provision in for drainage ditches, and that's the one rod on each side, and it's only required if after some date in the 1970s, if there's been a redetermination of benefits after that date, because all the people along the ditch pay for that buffer that goes in the ditch. The landowner is paid basically for the damage for not being able to grow a crop on that land. And so that's a kind of a whole different world. And if you were to apply this 50-foot to drainage ditches, it would be a fairly significant change in how we do drainage lines.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Knopf. And then to the testifier, when I read on your slide, and private ditches, are you recommending a change to the law that Mr. Knopf was just talking about, or was that what's the reference that the council is talking about there?
Mr. Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members, no. And as you've already pointed out, too, what the governor's proposing is far from fleshed out at this point. One thing that is a little bit different, I think, does get back to some of the questions that Senator Osmick posed, is that the other thing that's a little bit unique about what we're recommending is that those buffers be applied based upon the water body type. So it's not going to be just one size fits all across the state. It's a one size in the sense that the buffer itself, whatever size it happens to be, really does provide environmental benefit right away. Now, whether that needs to be a buffer that's 10 feet wide, 20 feet wide, 50 feet wide, that's really left up to, A, the ordinances that exist for those particular counties and jurisdictions that have them, to have them enforced appropriately, and then, you know, based upon the water body type, what do you need at a lake versus what you need in a larger, you know, more tilled agricultural area? Those things are going to be different.
Senator Scoy.
And, Mr. Chair, just so I think I heard, you're really not proposing changes to the current buffer strip laws. You're just asking for more uniform enforcement?
Mr. Flowers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. You can continue.
The second recommendation that the council presented in its report is the one where we're recommending that as the watersheds develop their plans, that particularly outside the Twin Cities, that those comprehensive water management plans include goals for water storage. This is another one of the low-hanging fruit for environmental benefit, and that is to the extent that we can manage the water on land and allow it to infiltrate, that has multiple benefits both for contaminants as well as for recharge of the groundwater and making sure that we're doing things that will ensure the longevity of our groundwater resources. So that was the second policy recommendation that's in the report. Next is that there's just a couple of resolutions. The one is that the council, after looking through the One Watershed, One Plan approach, really feels that that offers us the best framework as a state for water resources planning and management in the long term. And so we support that effort. And then we also support the guidelines for aquatic invasive species activities. As we all well know, there's been a lot of different issues crop up in the last year or so on different types of invasive species that are creeping into our waters and trying to manage those.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Flowers, to the One Watershed, One Plan recommendation, the area that I live in Minnesota has pretty good coverage by watershed districts, but there are areas of the state that do not have watershed districts. Is the council given any thought to any mechanisms to encourage watershed districts to be implemented broader, because I agree that I think it's a good way to manage the water, and it's a good way to do, cleanup of the water on a watershed district as opposed to county jurisdictions and that sort of thing. And I was just wondering if anybody's given any thought to how we would expand watershed districts in the state if we could do that.
Go ahead, you can. She can answer if you want.
At this point, I don't really have an answer for that. I know that the PCA is working with the 81 watersheds across the state to get watershed plans developed, but to the extent that the watershed organizations in some areas are either non-existent or a fledgling state, the council's really not worked to address that specific issue. But I will take that back to the council. That is that's a good point, that we need to find a way to encourage those things if they're not being developed.
Okay. Keep going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I alluded to this kind of initially, but the future funding needs are one of those things that we all kind of have to keep in mind as we keep moving down this road with the Clean Water Fund and the Legacy Act. There's the issues across the state are overwhelming, and they're a dynamic issue. It's not something that sits static. It constantly is changing on us, and so we've seen kind of a number of reports come out over this last year, whether it was the Clean Water Performance Report, the Clean Water Roadmap that the agencies put out, the Minnesota Nutrient Reduction Strategy, which was to try to address the nutrient issue in our rivers, lakes, and streams, and then the Sediment Reduction Strategy for the Minnesota River in the South Metro area. All of these have kind of pointed to the fact that while the Clean Water Legacy Act gives us a new pot of money to make some new and significant progress that we've not made before, it's just such a large issue that we're going to have to be creative in how we as a whole look at funding these issues going forward. And so the council really believes that, number one, a higher percentage of the funds coming from the Clean Water Fund really do need to be dedicated to on-the-ground restoration activities. These are things that will make a difference right away, but then we also have to really look at local, state, federal, the leverage funding, and even partners that we can draw into this process to help us as a state and Minnesotans to really achieve that vision of clean and sustainable water for the long run. The Clean Water Fund gives us a good springboard to start from, but it's by no means the silver bullet that solves the problem. Any questions? We have an extra slide here that shows kind of the Clean Water Fund appropriations over time. And you can see a little bit of how things are changing. And the one that shows the biggest increase from the over the last couple of bienniums, and the one that were the 16-17 biennium and our recommendations, is the one for the non-point source implementation activities. Most of the other areas are within a percent or two of kind of the historical funding levels.
Okay. Senator Ingebretson, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly then. So we got a long ways to go, but I look back at the second to the last document, Clean Water Fund Progress. Is it fair to say then that without the legacy funding so far that you wouldn't be able to come to us with this report of the progress of the rivers and streams that are now been cleaned up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, I believe so. Those activities that are identified are things that are over and above what would have taken place. That's the new significant activities we've been able to accomplish because of the Clean Water Fund.
Thank you.
Senator Squire.
Thank you. And just, a comment, maybe if you want to comment back, that'd be all right. There was some discussion started a year or two ago, and I think there's a group that's worked on it a little bit over the interim that's trying to see if there's a mechanism to do some of the mitigation work for wetland disruptions outside of the watershed. You know, we've done a lot of studies in the state, and some of which you identified in your report, that have targeted water areas where you could do mitigation that would actually have pretty significant impacts to water quality. You could get a lot more bang for your buck on water quality if you do some of these mitigation works where those needs are greater. Just wondering if you guys have any thought on that, or if you've been part of that process, and if the council has a position on, I guess the issue is whether the mitigation has to require within the greater watershed district, or whether perhaps we should be targeting these mitigation efforts where the needs are more great.
Flowers.
Mr. Chair, council members, that's not a topic that specifically we have taken up as a council. I think it's something that's worth looking into, but that really becomes a policy issue and a watershed management issue, and we've really not delved into that, so I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't know if you did or not.
Mr. McKay, do you want to add anything?
Not really, but I think at some point, another part of our mantle or charter is the prevention piece. And it doesn't get highlighted very often because it's something that's hard to measure, and it doesn't show up on the bottom line numbers when you look at percent improvement. But you got to remember, he indicated that things aren't static. So anything that was done on the prevention end probably isn't captured in that number, but it is in a part of that number.
Barb, you want to add anything? Larry Newbritson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hate to keep asking so many questions, but
no, today we have time. But yes, you know, as we all know, as we get further into the session, our committee hearings are only an hour and a half, and so it's going to be really important we start on time if we want to get done on time. And because of the space limitations here in the Capitol, we've only had three hearing rooms, and so we don't have the 2 hours and 45 minutes we normally have. So. That's why we're going to try and get started on time and get things done. Today we have some extra time, and these guys were in my office for way longer than they're talking here today, so I'm not sure what they're leaving out just now. But Mr. McKay, he seems to he could probably keep going for another half an hour if he wanted to. But,
I'll spare you.
Okay. I just want.
But we're glad to answer any questions.
I thought it was important to get this testimony on record and have anybody that wants to ask them some questions. So Senator Ingebretson, go ahead.
Just real quickly, thank you, Mr. Chair, and. A gentleman on the way over to this very meeting asked me the question, and I would ask this of you: have through the Clean Water Council done any talks of or studies of, or do you have the authority to do, or do you do anything with regards to the mining area of the state? Now that's kind of a broad question, and I probably should have put a little more thought into how I would go about that, but what do you do with the mining area of our state, which is obviously there's quite concern about water, and do any of these buffers, do you envision any of these buffers at all being looked at there, or is it already being taken care of? Just tell me it is, and I'll just back off and we'll go from there. Maybe we can talk later.
Well, the short answer is,
Chair, maybe you know, Mr. Chair.
The short answer is they all have to get permits already, and so
yeah, they have regulations.
All kinds of, yeah.
Okay, but, yeah, that's fine.
So that's the short answer.
Yeah, that's
the
good.
Long
that's a good
the long answer is it takes a long time to get the permits.
So, no
kidding.
Yeah, the long answer is long. So this is okay.
Mr. Chair and members, just to give you kind of a realistic view of the role of the Clean Water Council or what actually happens, as you know, the water issue can be as complex as you want to make it. And we meet the biennium, what you're talking about is a 24-hour or 24 meetings. It's over the 2 year. We meet once a month, 2 years, for the general meeting. We were forced to prioritize what we take on because there is so much information. And so we're very reliant on the agencies, as we all are, because so much of the resources in this area sit in the agencies. But we also bring in academics, and we bring in the experts on different topics. But again, even we had to prioritize just so that we just weren't a mile wide and an inch deep. We wanted to figure out what really counted, and then we focused on that, and that is what you're getting in front of you. So there's lots of things that just never made our plate, and even if they did, it wouldn't be our – we'd never drill down. We never want to get in a point where we're telling the people who are doing the work what the best approach. We can give them feedback. We can say, have you considered this or that? But we probably would never want to micromanage any of these projects. We just couldn't. We don't have those kinds of resources.
Senator Westrom? I'm sorry. Left, there it is.
Mr. Chair, kind of to this buffer question that we were talking about, I guess maybe Mr. Knopf could add in on this, the 50-foot buffer. What is the standard? And you talk about the local standards being similar or implemented similar. Is there no planting when you're talking farm agriculture land, or do they want planting every year, just no harvest? And if you're going to plant it, you got to do some tilling, I would think, before you plant it. So I'm just curious if you could just offer a little more insight, Mr. Cunoff, or maybe to one of the witnesses, testifiers. Mr. Cunoff.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, what I'll do is I've got the rule in front of me here, that the one that people talk about the most. And it says the shore impact zone for parcels with permitted agricultural land uses is equal to a line parallel to and 50 feet from the ordinary high water level. And then paragraph B says general cultivation, farming, grazing, nurseries, horticulture, truck farming, sod farming, and wild crop harvesting are permitted uses if steep slopes and shore and bluff impact zones are maintained in permanent vegetation or operated under an improved conservation plan. So that's how it reads. It doesn't really say what an approved conservation plan is, but it does it does talk about that. So there is some activity that can go on, but it's just the general, you know, crop farming is supposed to be prohibited in that 50-foot area. And I think the issue that you've been hearing in recent years is that some counties or some local governments, whoever has the zoning authority, have been starting to enforce this more, but a number of them have not. So there's been an inconsistent enforcement of this requirement. And that's what you've been hearing a lot about. One of the things the governor mentioned was getting into state enforcement of this requirement in certain instances, because currently this is a model ordinance that the locals adopt. DNR develops the model ordinance, which is the shoreland zoning ordinance, and the locals adopt it and the locals enforce it. And so that's the issue that people have been talking about.
So Mr. Chair, and Mr. Knopf, maybe you're the one or one of the testifiers, at some point do we not have a bit of a takings issue? I mean, I understand where you've got steep banks and you can't necessarily farm it, and you, et cetera, but I think of the area where I grew up and a couple miles to the west. I mean, it's just a nice gradual slope down to the river. You can farm it. Sometimes on a heavy 6-8-inch rain, you're going to lose some cropland because it's going to get high rivers and high banks. And I'm just trying to square that with what is allowed or what farmers are going to start seeing happen here. So I don't know who's the right one to testify, but just I want a little
Barb, insight. Do you know that answer? Or no? Okay. This might be something we're going to be exploring as we go through this committee during this session, because I think it's probably going to rise to the surface of things that we end up talking about by the time this session's over. So
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, on that issue, I mean, do you – seems to me that there is probably a takings question
Mr. Chairman,
with this type of regulation on a land that could otherwise be farmed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westrom, as you know, takings is a very complicated area.
Yeah.
I wouldn't pretend to know whether this is a takings or not. But it's, you know, I mean, there is some use still allowed of that land. It's just a question of what it's used for.
Yeah.
And so that's the taking's a very complicated thing through the courts and how they determine when all uses are basically prohibited. I wouldn't pretend to even know whether this would be rise to that level or not.
All right. Thanks.
Senator Ingebretson, you asked a question about mining, but there's a map in here that shows the watersheds. It's on page 19. And there's one little spot right there on the map that when a drop of water, it's a big, it's a rock on the property of Hibbing Taconite, north of Chisholm. And when a drop of water drops on that rock, it spreads out into three different directions. And one third of the drop of water goes north, one-third of the drop of water goes east, and one-third of the drop of water goes south. So there's three different watersheds right in that one little spot right there. So it's a pretty interesting setup. So consequently, it's actually a pretty complicated area for permitting also. Now that Senator Dibble's here, do you have any questions? Because we're about to adjourn if you're...
Credit for being here and full per diem.
Okay. Senator West.
Mr. Chairman, to the testifier that talked about the farm groups all being a part of this, can you just share with us what groups are were you talking about?
Mr. McKay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the State Farm Bureau is represented on the Clean Water Council. So they, I think that's it. And they have two representatives that sit on the council.
And are you saying that they have signed off on a 50-foot buffer, or they don't have any further questions about it?
They don't have a choice.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no, they've not signed off on the 50-foot buffer. Okay. They were part of the development of the council's recommendations about buffers, but you notice that that recommendation doesn't specify a number, and it basically is asking for just implementation of the existing buffer laws that exist across the state, mm-hmm. with local implementation and local enforcement being done on that based upon the water body types and the local needs.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. McKay?
Yes, and I would just... Again, further clarify that the council is not making any recommendations to change the buffer law. That isn't our recommendation. It is simply the statutes and rules that have been in place for years already, and then a consistent enforcement of that rule, that alone would make a big deal of difference, and that's what our recommendation is. There's a lot of discussion now because of what has been introduced in the last few weeks, but we're talking about the rules and statutes that are already in place.
You know, I think one of the things that's confusing people here is the underlining of the words that you have right up on the screen, and it makes it look like it's something new. And so maybe you should just point out what that's saying, so people understand.
Point taken.
Okay. So the issue there is that you're not suggesting anything new to the buffer zones. It's just that you're suggesting something different about how it's enforced or how it's actually however.
That wasn't the scope of our right.
Okay, all right.
That wasn't the scope of our recommendation.
Okay, all right. So because around here when you underline things, we think it's new language.
Yes.
Okay. So.
Okay. Cultural.
Okay. So and just one last thing. So, Senator Osmick, were you just not there on picture day? Is that the deal here?
I think I was gone.
Were you taking the picture? Maybe you took the picture. Is that what it was?
No. But the members here will admit I do try to make as many as I can.
I wasn't. I'm assuming you were. I figured you had to leave earlier. You got there late or something.
Mr. Chairman, I think this one actually might have been taken on a tour up in Moorhead. Was it not there?
No, this was taken in St. Paul.
I was gone.
It did have to be rescheduled, so that's.
You guys should Photoshop his head in here somewhere.
Okay, it was unavoidably detained.
Okay, so there's room in there.
All right. Any other comments or questions from the committee members? So, all right. Just a reminder. I made an announcement earlier for some of the committee members that weren't here that on February 17th we're going to try and get a tour of the Uniman mine down in Mankato. It's a silica sand mine, and if there's enough people, we'll try and get a bus to go down. Otherwise, we'd maybe just a couple of us go down in cars. So we'll see what the feedback is. It looks like it's going to be February 17th, which is a Tuesday, and it's about an hour and a half from here. So it'll take us most of the day. So, all right. No other comments. You have any closing comments before I
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for giving us some of your precious time. I know that with all the construction and cramped schedules that everybody's having to deal with, time's very valuable to you. So thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
And if the members want hearings, let our staff know. Okay. So thank you all very much, and meeting adjourned.
Maybe I can teach you wrong.
Give back a few minutes. Well,
maybe they need to pay
I don't know if they'll...